Blog Talk Radio.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Good afternoon and welcome to Engage for Success Radio, show number 60, Engage the Engaged, a Not-for-Profit Perspective. I'm Jo Dodds, your host for today. I'm a social media HR consultant working with the Engage for Success movement, leading on digital and social media. The Engage for Success movement is an inclusive movement committed to the idea that there is a better way to work by releasing more of the capability and potential of people at work. We spread the word about employee engagement and shine a light on good practice, widely supported across the UK involving the public, private and third sectors. If you go to our website, engageforsuccess.org, and use the orange button in the top right, you can join in and join our newsletter list. And if you tweet, please share your thoughts using our hashtag, which is #E4S, and that's with the number 4. And come and join us on our LinkedIn groups to continue the discussion. We've got a number of groups. If you go to our homepage on the right-hand side, there's a section that says Connect with Us and a link there that takes you to a page that talks about the different groups that we have so that you know which one to join or more than one to join if appropriate for you. So today I'm speaking to Martin Dicker, who's the Director of Human Resources and Organisational Development at Fair Trade Foundation. The Fair Trade Foundation is the independent, non-profit organisation that licences use of the Fair Trade mark on products in the UK, and that's in accordance with the internationally agreed Fair Trade standards, which I'm sure we'll talk about in a minute when I start speaking to Martin. And today we're talking about employee engagement in the third sector, which according to my Google search is described as the part of an economy or society comprising non-governmental and non-profit-making organisations or associations, and that includes charities, voluntary and community groups and cooperatives and so on. Again, something I think we'll touch on shortly. With Martin's nearly 3 years with Fair Trade Foundation and over 8 years with the British Red Cross, and as the chair of our Engage Success Third Sector subgroup, he's in a great position to help us to explore this interesting topic today. So welcome, Martin. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you very much, Jo.
So perhaps you could start by telling us a bit more about your background and your work with Fair Trade.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thanks. And just maybe a few words about Fair Trade just to bring that description to life a little. So we're a development charity and we seek to tackle poverty and injustice, but we do that through trade. Our role here in the UK is very much to build interest and galvanise the public and really get organisations, businesses to try and deepen their commitment. In other words, for us to sort of help by selling more fair trade products. And as I say, prior to that, my experiences were in a number of different roles at British Red Cross and a little bit of work in the private sector before that.
Excellent. So tell us first a bit about the third sector. So we talked a bit about my description of fair trade at the beginning, and then my Googling came up with the what the third sector is. So what is it from your perspective, and how does it differ from the private and public sectors?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, it's an interesting one. I think there's quite a few different terms, whether it's referring to the not-for-profit sector, third sector, voluntary sector, charity sector, and I think a number of those terms are used. But, I mean, probably, I guess, for the context of Engage for Success, what's probably quite interesting is to note that it's got a far smaller workforce than the private or public sector. Only about 3% of the working population actually are in this sector, and it's about 750,000 people, so a fair bit smaller. But it's grown. It's grown a lot, actually. The last 10 years, it's actually grown by 10%, so, you know, quite a change. And probably one area that might be of interest is that in contrast to the private sector, it's actually two-thirds of the workforce are female. So, again, quite a change. And one obvious unique difference is we've got a really large voluntary workforce. So about 10 million adults in the UK volunteer at least once a month. So if you sort of equate that to full-time workers, it would probably require getting close to about 1.5 million full-time workers to actually provide that sort of equivalent time and energy being put in from volunteers.
Wow, that's some amazing statistics. I think we're firstly reserving the right to use all of those terms, aren't we, to describe the, as we started with third sector today, but we might interchange all the others.
I'm sure I'll do the same.
But that's just amazing to hear the numbers of people involved and the growth as well. What, where's that coming from, do you think?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think there's growth in a number of different areas, but probably what's actually quite interesting about that is it's during a time when there's been even greater demands, and actually a number of organisations and charities have had funding cuts. And you'll recall sort of all the talk of Big Society back a few years ago. And obviously a lot of that we're seeing voluntary organisations providing greater support to different communities. But at the same time, there was a number of cuts going on. So it's been, it has been a very challenging time. And over the last couple of years, we've seen the number of people in the third sector drop. But actually, it's still gone up by over 10% in 10 years. So it's still seeing some growth.
And I guess you've always got that, as you say, that sort of differential between paid employees within the sector and the volunteer force, and that will change depending on, I guess, economics and employment and all those other things as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, even if you just look at youth unemployment as just one example, I mean, obviously that's an area where a number of people might choose to then put some energy into volunteering, give them lots of experience and opportunities and references and ways into the workforce as well. And even on the back of the Olympics and so on, there's certainly lots of interest in volunteering.
So, of course, one of the things that will presumably drive that potential increase in people in the sector is actually the sort of the issues that are being helped and resolved through the people joining the sector or volunteering. So I think it's quite often assumed that third sector employees are engaged because of the fact that they, mostly believe in the cause of the organisation they're working with. Is that actually true? How does that sort of play out from an employee engagement point of view? Is it the same thing?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I would agree. I think largely it is the case. I think many employees in the not-for-profit sector are attracted by the cause. So that might well see them positively, advocating, get out there and telling people about the benefits of their organisation and what it stands for, and also people willing to go the extra mile. I just think just in this last couple of weeks we've had a really busy period of campaigning, and particularly around banana pricing, and it didn't take terribly much to persuade a few of our staff to get out on the street dressed as bananas and approaching Vince Cable on how cheap bananas were threatening farmers' futures. And I sort of wonder how many sectors you could quite get away with that, but people are quite willing to really are going the extra mile. And I think one thing as we relate this back to engagement, and what's quite interesting is how much people are really engaged with the cause and what we really stand for, as opposed to the sort of plans and the goals of the organisation. And my sense of that is I think the real deep commitment people have, let's say at Fair Trade, that might be around trade justice. That's fantastic if we've naturally got people engaged. But actually, I think what makes an even bigger difference is when people are engaged with the details of what our goals are, what our plans are, what our strategies are. I think that's where you can see real impact.
I think that was a classic line you used earlier about it didn't take much for people to go out dressed as bananas. I think it would take quite a lot to get me to go out dressed as a banana, but who knows.
So, we'll have you volunteering
yet. Let's think about the four enablers then, as far as the engagement within the sector, because you just already talked about the whole sort of strategic narrative piece and having employees and volunteers, I guess, who are very sort of aware of the goals of the organisation. And obviously, that is one of the four enablers. So how do they apply? So is there more to say about the strategic narrative in relation to the sector?
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly something I guess you would expect to come through very strongly from leaders in the third sector, is around that real strong narrative. And I think if you have a very inspiring vision, I mean, obviously something your staff and your volunteers can be passionate about, I mean, it's somewhat easier to get them engaged. I think what's quite interesting, though, is when I think about it, and let's say your particular goal is eradicating poverty, organisations may not always be talking about that. They might not always be sort of maximising it by celebrating the progress or creating an inspiring picture of the future, and almost because it's so obvious to us, because that's how we spend our time is around these type of issues, we probably don't do enough to actually sell the benefits of working for an organisation that's got such a strong sort of focus on improving the world.
I mean, can you get people who are, I don't know, sort of archetypal do-gooders? They're very keen to be volunteering or working within the third sector, and they're not necessarily that interested. That's not probably right, is it, to say not interested in the cause? But it's not that's driving them. It's the fact that they actually want to make a difference in the world, if you like, and they're less perhaps discerning about in which charity, which third sector organisation they work with, or is that not the case? There's very much a sort of cut them in the middle, and they, you know, you can read the cause through the middle sort of thing.
No, I think it's a really interesting question. I mean, my sense is a lot of people do work in different charitable organisations, so they might work for one for a number of years, then move on to another. And actually, it's probably something that as you join an organisation that you have, I guess, respect for, the more you get to understand it, the more you recognise the difference they make, it actually probably your commitment to them gets even deeper. So it may well mean people moving from an international development agency. They might then go and work for a charity that is focused on, you know, youth unemployment. So people might well move around from different ones. But I think probably partly the culture as well is something that really attracts people. But I guess there's the flip side to that, and there probably are some that could see themselves doing nothing other than working for a particular area of a charity. So that might be trade justice, might be the thing that personally and really they're passionate about, and they would only want to work in that particular area.
Mm. And how easy is it to create, develop and highlight the line of sight for that employee and volunteer to, you know, the goal of the organisation? In some ways, I think it would be easier than in the private sector. In some ways, it may be harder because they're such big causes and you know, big things that you're trying to do that, you know, what's my role in it can actually get lost perhaps along the way. But how easy is that?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think about the sort of journey we've been on at Fair Trade, and I mean, we recognise how important that was because ultimately, if actually what driving individuals and what personally motivates them is actually the cause and how they can play a role in making a difference, we've tried to design all of our sort of performance frameworks around this sort of golden thread. And what I mean by that is a thread from what's in somebody's work plan, their objectives, the team plans, the goals of the particular organisation, so they can get a great sense of how their contribution can play a part towards those particular goals and what they're trying to achieve as far as impact.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so moving on to the second enabler around engaging managers, it strikes me that there's some challenges there in, as you've already mentioned, the fact that you've got managers who are managing not only employees but also volunteers, and whilst it's good to have people, you know, really heading in the same direction because of the cause, actually sometimes I guess it's a bit like herding cats because people have got their own sort of ideas and motivations, and because they're not being paid, maybe a different perspective on how to do things. How does that work from a leadership point of view?
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. I think it's a particularly interesting area in the not-for-profit sector. And I think it's probably worth reflecting as well that a large number of voluntary sector organisations actually only employ quite small numbers of people. So actually, the type of things that you might take for granted in some bigger organisations around things like management development or leadership development programmes, they're actually just much less commonplace. So there probably are sort of, you know, the less skills being developed in-house. I mean, that's something we've worked hard on to ensure people do get that support, but it's certainly not commonplace. And certainly when I talk to colleagues in other charitable organisations, my sense is some of the common things we see is people shying away from some of those tough conversations and even probably some of the tough performance management. And I heard the sort of description, love sack, as a style of management, and sadly I could recognise it having worked for a number of different charities that actually that is the way that sometimes people want, you know, are seen to manage.
Mm. It's quite hard to give you know, difficult feedback and some of the sort of performance management things in an environment where it's an employment situation and you're, you know, that there's that sort of understanding in that relationship. I can see that when you're talking to people who are there because they've chosen to be, having those difficult conversations, you know, you could start off hard and never mind when you start doing them, and they probably are harder, I would have thought, in lots of ways. So from an employee voice point of view, so getting feedback from the employees and the volunteers, how does that change, or how is that similar to the private sector?
Yeah, well, I think probably where it is slightly different is that certainly majority of sort of colleagues I talk to in other charities describe themselves as having a very collaborative culture, and I think that's a pretty accurate description. And actually, if you think about many not-for-profit organisations that are campaigning, and certainly we find that ourselves, people aren't backwards at coming forward. So they're pretty persuasive in having their views known. And I think in many ways that's great. You know, it's really fantastic in that you're able to hear very clearly what the sort of views of staff and volunteers are, and you get a real sense of how engaged they are in what you're trying to do. I think what can be quite a challenge is that, of course, when you get that volume of feedback, it's actually pretty hard to be able to act on all of it. So that can be a change. So, for example, managing change in these type of organisations can be a real challenge, and particularly when it's something they've deeply and emotionally are connected to, it actually requires a lot more energy, a lot more time to be able to commit to actually get people to see why you're doing it and why you've chosen a particular path.
Mm. And is there some sort of wider topic, if you like, when that employee voice thing happens? Is there a muddling of having an opinion and getting more emotional around the cause and all that side of it? It just sort of strikes me that because there's so much emotion probably in people's reason for being there, more so perhaps than in a private sector organisation, that as you say, managing change is difficult. Are there, you know, extra challenges as well because of that whole emotional side of things?
Absolutely there is, and I think you certainly have to allow more time, and certainly my experience of managing a number of change programmes in the sector, you've just got to allow much more time for people to understand and deal with it and provide an opportunity to feed into the process. And it really is critical that actually when you engage your workforce and you start to consult with them, then actually you're doing it genuinely and that they really are, I guess, able to start to provide some direction as well as just be on the receiving end of what the decisions are that are being made. So I think this certainly allowing more time for that is critical, providing the right opportunities for people to have their say. And I think it's also that recognition as well, you've got to keep the sort of the big goals in sight, because actually sometimes it can be quite easy to then be caught up in all the processes. So actually continuing to paint this picture of the future and why you believe this is going to have the biggest difference for your beneficiaries is absolutely critical.
I think I remember from when we were originally talking about this show, you said that in some cases you have employees who you're talking to as an employee one day, and then the next day they have left the organisation for a number of reasons, and maybe it's reorganisation, and they're back volunteering with you. That must put added pressure on the managers in managing those people.
It does, yeah, and certainly those relationships change. So somebody might have joined an organisation as a volunteer and then over time applied for different roles and then been successful, and then, you know, it may well be that the post has not continued, or they've then decided to retire from that and come back as a volunteer. But it means they've got a lot of institutional memory. And with that, of course, means they might well have been involved even in fundraising for a particular unit or a particular piece of work. So if a decision is then made that you're no longer going to pursue it or continue it, you could imagine that people are going to be personally quite hurt by that. So, again, it's that recognition as you go through any change that people may well be looking at it from lots of different angles and may well be very personally attached to it.
Mm. I interviewed Phil Sherwood from the Olympic Volunteering Programme in the summer, which is quite interesting, as you can imagine, the sort of size of that programme and it being quite a short-term programme in the end compared to other situations. How did the success of that program affect the third sector? Because it's something that people still talk about and still refer back to, the Olympic sort of experience, don't they?
Yeah, they do, absolutely. Well, I mean, I think the London Olympics, obviously, it was a great source of pride. I think there were sort of 70,000-odd voluntary games makers that played a part in it. And, you know, I think for all of us that got to go to events and venues and so on, those sort of friendly faces were, you know, they were really great inspiration and really lifted the mood of the nation. And I think it's about the only time I've ever seen people chatting on the way to work on the tube. So they certainly had a big impact at the time. I mean, there was some research not long after the Games that indicated about 3 million people were more inspired to volunteer directly as a result of the London 2012 Olympics. So I guess the figures then were big. I guess what's quite hard as you sort of fast forward a couple of years is actually to really pinpoint the difference it has made. You know, I think fantastic to see that sort of widespread applause and recognition of the workforce at the time. But it's pretty hard to pinpoint why people are motivated to volunteer now and how that relates back to the Olympics a couple of years ago. But I guess if I relate it back to my own organisation, Fair Trade, I mean, that was, interestingly, the group, the 18 to 24-year-olds were the group that the feedback and research showed that they were the most inspired to volunteer as a result of the Olympics. And I have to say, that's the group where we see the largest number of volunteers ourselves. So, you know, whether that was part of the driving force, I don't know, but it certainly rings true in my organisation.
Mm-hmm. So to finish off the discussion about the four enablers, we've got the integrity piece as well, so that, you know, not having a say-do gap, making sure that, you know, the values on the wall are what's happening within the organisation. That seems to me one of the easier of the four for the sector. Is that me just oversimplifying?
No, I don't think so. And I think, you know, you're right in that way, in that actually you would expect this to be stronger in voluntary organisations. In my sense, actually, that is normally the case. And it's very much around people living the values rather than laminating them, as sadly you often see.
I love that line.
And I suppose what I'd be quite interested in actually is thinking about some of the fantastic leaders that we have got in the sector, because you often hear, you know, sort of wonderful leaders quoted from, you know, the motor industries or aerospace or different areas. But actually, I think there's something about some of the wisdom of people in this sector around ethical leadership that actually could play a bigger part in improving the society at large by actually sharing some of their view on how they've approached leadership challenges.
Mm. And that leads us quite nicely into talking about the context and focus of the third sector subgroup, of which you're the chair. So who's involved with that? What are you doing? What is the sort of intended output of that group?
Yeah. So, I mean, we're still relatively new. And as you say, I've just taken over the chair. And just a couple of weeks ago, actually, we had a really fantastic meeting. We had there was 11 different not-for-profit organisations represented. That included the likes of Cancer Research UK, WaterAid, Turning Point, Amnesty, Broadway Housing, so a large number of them. We also had quite a number of experts in the field, and ever-inspiring David McLeod joined us for the day as well, which was great. And we were sort of working through, actually, you know, what are the particular areas of interest and how do we as a subgroup think that we can have the most impact. And there was three areas where we were particularly interested to sort of dig a bit deeper, you could say. The first one was around measures to more accurately reflect the genuine engagement. And I guess what I mean by that is, you know, you can have these very high engagement scores, as often you do have in the not-for-profit sector, but actually they can often be skewed by employees' strong commitment to the cause rather than actually their sort of genuine engagement. So that's something we were really keen to just to find a bit more about and dig a little deeper. The second point was around the sort of engagement beyond the mission. So again, this is really just about making sure that people are engaged beyond that overall sort of calling or the cause, and making sure that this is part of a real engagement with the plans, the goals, the strategies, and so on. And the third piece, as you would probably naturally imagine, is around engaging volunteers. So those are three areas around, let's say, measurement, beyond the mission, and volunteers were the three things we want to focus on.
And have you got sort of timescales, ideas of, you know, what might come out of it? I'm hoping you'll come back and be interviewed again about the findings of the group.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I suppose over the sort of coming months, I mean, one thing we particularly want to do is to trial looking at different ways of looking at engagement scores. There's lots of different measures out there, and of course we're not particularly advocating for one or over the other, but actually what we'd like to be able to do is work out ones that work particularly well in not-for-profit organisations, so they give a much more accurate figure of what we believe the engagement score to be. So you can continue to go back. I mean, it's wonderful, I say, to report back to the board you've got high levels of engagement, but I think it's probably more important to get to the bottom of how genuine that is and what difference it's making. So that's something we're keen to do over the coming months. We haven't yet sort of set any goals and deadlines on the engaging volunteers area. Something we've just agreed to sort of look at this particular one, but certainly over the coming months, again, we'll have some news on that one. And as I say, the third one around engaging the mission, I think that's going to take a bit of time. And actually, it would be better that we have more organisations feeding into us. So certainly a call for others to get involved in that. Because as I say, at the moment, we're still a relatively small group, but with lots of interest. And certainly if there's more interest coming forward, that will really help us be able to explore that a little deeper.
That's great. And what's the best way for people to contact you on that? Is it through our website or directly, or what would you say?
Absolutely, either one. Either via the website, LinkedIn, or either one of those is absolutely fine. We'd love to hear from people.
Brilliant. Excellent. So tell us a bit about the employee engagement journey, particularly within Fairtrade.
Yeah, okay, yeah, no, I'd love to. I mean, we've had quite an overhaul. I mean, I think it would be fair to say it was fairly sort of transactional approach to it previously, and it was quite simplistic. So we simply took a satisfaction score based on an annual survey to the board, and like many organisations, we probably spent too much time on designing questions and analysing results than we actually did on taking action as to what was said. So we've gone through a real change in that area. And looking at using engagement scores, so something that we think is a much better measure of genuine engagement. We've also really improved the ownership of the results. So we used to break the results down much further, and that gives each of the teams just much more ownership and much more desire to sort of move forward on the results. We've also got champions within each of the teams, and you know, some really clear action plans. And you know, again, it probably sounds obvious, but we're just making sure that every couple of months we're feeding back on what we're actually doing as a result of it. Because it's very easy just to sort of take action, but actually not spend that time telling people the progress you've made and what the next steps are. So we're doing much more of that. And something we're just about to launch is the use of pulse surveys. That's not something we've done before. But recognising an annual survey really only gives you paints a picture of that point in time. We want to just keep going back to get a pulse of where that engagement figure is going and some of the areas of concern. We're just going to, again, ask questions in those areas and see if the interventions we've put in place are actually making a difference. So, yeah, quite a period of change for us in employee engagement, but still much more we need to do. And certainly, I guess, that point around how to best engage all managers at all levels around the role they play in engagement is certainly one of our key priorities for the year ahead.
And what's the sort of split for you around employed and volunteer within the organisation?
Yeah, well, we're quite an interesting one. If I think I've just come from previously British Red Cross, and there it was an organisation getting close to 4,000 staff and probably 10 times as many volunteers, so quite a different makeup. Actually, here at Fair Trade, we've got a much, much smaller volunteer workforce. In our head office here, we probably only have about 30 volunteers at one time, and that's with about 100 staff just here at the head office. Mm-hmm. But what we do have is thousands of grassroots campaigners. And actually what's interesting is it's the strength voice of tens of thousands of grassroots campaigners that really enables us to have a far greater impact.
So what's the sort of characteristic of a volunteer with Fairtrade? What sort of work would they be doing?
Yeah, well, it's probably quite a mix. I guess if I think of a volunteer here at the office, I mean, there's often a real interest to get involved in our campaigns teams or our policy teams. And, I mean, as I say, we seem to attract a lot of, I guess, fairly young grads in that they've come out, they've got some qualifications behind them, got a bit of work experience and desperately keen to break into the sector. So often what they're quite keen to do is to get some sort of project experience and get involved. And if I think, you know, recently we've had been campaigning on banana pricing. So again, they're really keen just to get involved in what does that campaign look like, how to do it, and really take an active role. Others on the sort of policy area really keen to be able to sort of cut their teeth on some particular research work and looking at how fair trade makes an impact. But I guess outside of that and the sort of head office type volunteering, as I say, we've got people very active in all the communities campaigning, whether that be at universities, at schools, on their local high street. And again, for us, it's the strength of all of those people that can really enable us to have a far greater impact.
And you include them in your strategic narrative sort of conversations and so on, the people who are sort of spreading the word?
Well, it's an interesting one. I mean, we do in many ways, because we actually make sure we even have a sort of representative at that highest level on our board. So it's absolutely critical for us to make sure we are hearing the campaigner's voice. But actually, and again, this is probably a similar point to many not-for-profit organisations, we don't particularly have the IT systems throughout that enables us to make sure that we're getting all of their feedback and thoughts. So although we might be good on our kind of core staff and volunteers and getting their input as to our future direction and what we're trying to campaign on, we're probably not quite so good always at ensuring that we hear a kind of cross-section of all of our campaigners, but it's certainly something we're working much harder on.
Mm-hmm. Excellent. Well, we've come to the end of our show. It's been really, really interesting, and we've sort of packed a lot in with the talking about fair trade and about the sector and about the subgroup. So really appreciate your time, Martin, and sort of jumping around on all those different subjects. So thank you for joining us.
My pleasure.
Just let listeners know, next week it's an exciting experiment for the show. Jo Moffat will be presenting the show, and she'll be interviewing members of the Wellbeing subgroup live from the Guru Group meeting venue to get some final thoughts for Wellbeing Month through the lens of the Guru Group meeting. So I'll look forward to listening to that one on iTunes once it's finished, as I'm not around for it. So do remember that you can listen to our show on iTunes as well as on Blog Talk Radio and on SoundCloud and on our website. So any way that you'd like to listen, you pretty much can. So looking forward to hearing it next week.
Engage for Success Radio, raising the profile of employee engagement and shining a light on good practice for people who believe there's a better way to work.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.